We were talking about negative punishment, and I do want to finish that out. Taking away something to make the behavior go away, and it's always a release of pressure or the removal of attention. Those are the things that are really important. All right, so you came up with a question, and I've forgotten your name.
Susan.
Susan, okay. That's a really hard name.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's really uncommon.
Yeah. Okay. So could you, for the group, for the class, because there's some learning that has to be taking place here, and so I wanted to talk about what's going on and the learning that needs to happen with the dogs.
Okay, so I have three dogs. I have a six-year-old lab. She's actually not mine, but she's basically mine. I have a Kelpie Cavahoula, red nose mix, and I have a Cavahoula probably pit mix. And when I come home, open the door, I try to ignore them and go into the kitchen or wherever I have to go, because the lab spins around and she'll just bash you. My 11-year-old, he cowers because he's afraid he's going to get smashed by the bigger ones, but he wants to get in there and get attention. And then the youngest one, the Cavahoula mix, has learned that if I bend down or I move or something, he tries to jump on my back. Because they climb. I mean, that's just their nature. So that's basically the problem, is even ignoring them doesn't stop the behavior.
So how long has this been going on?
It's been going on probably for about a year, because other people living in the house, when they see the dogs, it's like, hey! They get all excited, and the dogs get just pumped like crazy. And they're all really reactive dogs anyway. That's their nature.
Reactive as in anything gets them going.
Anything gets them going.
All right. And so your behavior mod that you have tried so far, what have you done?
Is I used to greet them and say, oh, good dogs, and try to pat them and pay attention to them, which just made them do it, and they would compete against each other to get attention. So I've started trying not to look at them, which is really hard when you have three.
You're going to catch somebody's eye.
No, that's what happens. And you know, you're not staring at somebody, and there's the other one staring right at you. And so I try not to look, and I try to go to my destination without acknowledging them. Pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to get knocked down. It is definitely going to happen.
Well,
okay. So if this was a behavior problem and you're going, okay, now we've got to solve the behavior problem, what do the dogs have to learn? Your goal behavior is not to get out of getting greeted alive.
Right.
And how often does this happen, by the way? Every
single time I come in.
And how often does that happen?
At least twice a day.
Okay, twice a day or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do the dogs have to learn?
Not to rush the door.
Not to rush the door, not to knock her down. To give her some space, yeah? Mm-hmm. They're not giving her any space. And they're competing to not give them any.
Right.
So it's probably much worse than it would be if it were just the lab or even just two dogs. It's three dogs, all of which want to do that. So this is your client. What are you going to do? Yeah.
I'm gonna start by having you and whoever else lives in the
Could you
house.
Talk a little louder? I can't hear you. Though.
I would have Susan and anybody else who lives in the house to not greet them right away at all.
Well, it's just me right now, because it's just me.
And she's not.
Yeah. Okay.
So she's not greeting.
I would teach them maybe to go to place, go to their crate, and then I would call one out at a time.
Okay. Have you ever tried to do that with three dogs?
I have, yeah. My dogs used to be like that.
And your dogs all go to their place?
Yeah. Or I just ignore, and I just totally ignore them.
But do they go to their place?
They do.
Right away?
Yeah.
You are a great trainer. That is very, very hard to do. Most people cannot do it. Doing one is pretty easy. Doing two can be done. Doing three is an exercise in frustration. So if you've done that with you have three dogs, and you've done that with three dogs, then you should be standing up here talking to everybody, because that's really good. That really is. And I mean that sincerely. You did a really good job. assuming that this is a normal client and that they're probably not going to teach go to place, your other stuff sounds good and we can take it from there, okay? And yeah?
Is there any way to manage it so your dogs cannot rush the door? And I know that's not always possible, but is there any way to keep it while you're trying to teach them? Because I think it would be good to teach them a different behavior, but while you're trying to teach them, can you keep them from actually getting...
You mean like a gate or something?
I have a gate in the kitchen. I mean, I can close that.
Yeah. And then if you go in the kitchen,
if I open the gate, though,
they're going to go crazy then, too.
It's mayhem.
What if you were to come in the door and, like, do they know a word for, like, treat or something like that?
Well, they know treat.
So what if you said treat? What if you said, like, the dog's name? What if you worked on saying one dog's name? Whatever, like, if I said my puppy Fiona, treat. And you went over there, and then you said, blah, blah, treat, treat, like, would they...
You're going to get all three of them following for each treat.
Yeah, and then they fight. Mm-hmm. Then there can be a fight that develops.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so can you see if you're trying to do, yeah, if you're okay, trying to do that, so, and you're trying to teach all three dogs the same thing at the same time?
No, but you would, what I'm saying is, first you would, can you manage it? No, is there a way to manage it?
I see,
it? Then,
okay.
While you have, so they can't continue to do the behavior.
So then you try to teach them something.
Then you teach them separately how to do a different, something.
And then you add it together.
And then, yeah, so then you try to add it.
Okay.
Then you work with them, but you're going to work with them when you're not coming in the house, right? When you don't have to, just in the
yeah. Do you only have one way of entering the house?
Susan, do you only have one way of entering the house?
Yeah.
Okay. So that went that one went, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
What if she turned around and walked out, closed the door?
Actually, that's one thing that I was thinking of, and that's a good one. There are other...
Over and over.
Yeah, yeah. So if you decide to do that, this is the way to do that, okay? You go to the door, and you start to open the door, and the dogs all go, oh, my God, you're home. I thought I was going to die when you're not in your home, right? And you immediately close it. You can say, okay? And you close the door, and you don't look at them, and it takes them 5.5 minutes to calm down, okay? It may take them 30 seconds. It may take them forever. And then you start to open the door again. As soon as they start jumping up again, you close the door again. So you're using the door as a wait signal. And it is oftentimes a really good thing to do until eventually they just start to calm down, period. And then you walk in the house. So I would add to your thing, what you do when you walk in the house is you go, hi guys. So you can say hello, you just don't look at them.
Right.
You go into the kitchen and you stand against a counter. And the reason you're standing against a counter is because you've got dogs that are chasing you, right? So you don't want to fall down. And you have treats right behind you, and you tell the dogs to sit. And you wait until they sit. And then, one at a time, you give the dogs a treat. And then you ignore them again. Okay, so this is the only attention that they get. So it's you can't do this at the door. You can't slam at me at the door. That would be number one. Number two is you're going to go all the way into a place that is not the foyer. You can't have it. You can't meet dogs at the doorway because that's where they get going to paroxysms of delight, right? And so then you go all the way in and you give the dogs a cue that they understand, mm-hmm. and that all of them have to obey before anybody gets reinforced. So it's not that one is sitting and then the other one's sitting. It's that they all sit. You start to give one a treat and then one of them stands up and you take the treat away. So you're doing negative punishment, right? I'm taking this away. I'm going to give you positive reinforcement if you are good, but as soon as anybody jumps up. So eventually, they will be sitting like this. And then if you do this every single time, and I probably, if you've got time, practice it 5-6 times in one day. And then maybe 3 or 4 times the next day, and then 3 or 4 times a day after that. So they start to get a pattern. When I had 2 Rottweilers and a Belgian, this is precisely what I did, and it worked.
So if you come up to the door and you hear,
and they're you open, you start to open the door, but you only get it like that far open, right? And then you close it again. Because they're gonna, and that what they're gonna do, and then you can tell them to sit, but you don't chant it, you don't go sit. It's just one time, and then you just wait, and as we've been pointing out in this whole class, those with patience win, right? If you have patience, you actually will do well. I mean, if you're working with a shelter dog, that's one of the things you do with shelter dogs, is you just wait until they sit and then you let them out. You have three dogs who compete with one another. And so they have to all start cooperating with one another. So that's why I say when in the beginning, you kind of go, what do they need to learn? They need to learn that I'm not to be mugged. So that's what you're doing with what Andrew, what you were talking about, right? And then after that, there is a goal behavior. So you are controlling distance, goal, and the way to even get there. Yeah, and then you have them sit.
So do you add the going to the counter after they've calmed down at the door? They've learned that.
No, this is all a process.
Okay.
Although what you can do is you can make that place. You know, if you ever gone to a dolphin show, you know, where the like a trained dolphins or anything.
Oh, I've seen trained whales. So
yes. So what they do is they have a staging area. So after every trick or every behavior, the dolphins or the whales come to, and they slide up on that one staging area.
Right.
That is their reinforcement area, right there. That's where they always get reinforced. And so that becomes an extremely valuable area. So you could have that place in the kitchen be a staging area. You could say whenever you're going to give dogs treats in the house, you're going to go over to that place to give them treats in that. So they actually start to get the behavior of, I need to be calm right in this area. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
What would you do, you get to the counter, you say sit once, and you wait. What would you do if they just kind of lose interest?
Fine. That's great. If they walked away and lose interest, then that would be a fine behavior. I don't think I'd worry about it at all. The chances of these particular dogs doing it are probably nil.
No. They'll stand there.
But some dogs, some dogs might. Like a greyhound might go, do I care? I don't care. I'm not interested in food. I have to keep my svelte figure. Yeah. But labs, God knows, you know, they need more. Yes?
Why couldn't she treat them when they're calm right inside the door?
Because the dog, you'll get a treat and then the dogs would get all excited all over again. Three dogs. One dog you can. But three dogs? It's been my experience over these last 30-odd years that doorways have, remember I was talking about the staging area, right? And that's an area where they go to always get treats. Doorways are where exciting things happen. So you try to move them away from the doorway as much as possible. Also, when you have guests coming over, it's really nice to have that doorway clear. And usually, even if the people, and I've got several people who've taught their dog to wait at a mat, but the dog is sitting at the mat quivering. Just like, I gotta go see them. And I want the dog to actually relax. So I'm always looking at what is the emotional state I want the dog to be in. I want the dog to be calm. I want the dog to not feel quite so, you know, frantic. Make sense? Yes?
Question. So when I go, I have a couple of houses that I pick up dogs at, there's multiple dogs. I have been working kind of on the,
that's okay.
I've been doing, it's more of a gate that you walk through, not necessarily the house, but I guess it's the same threshold type of excitement. But I had noticed that if I get one to sit and treat that one, the other one is like, oh, that's what I need to do. Should I not do that and go?
No, you. If for you, it is your life and you do what works,
okay.
Right? So if it is working, it's just like anything else. If it works to do that, that's good. So when I get home, I have three little dogs and one big dog who doesn't care. He's lying in the bed going, oh, you're home. Great. But the three little dogs are all like, oh, my God, you've been gone for 10 minutes. I don't think I'm going to be able to survive any longer. So, you know, trying to figure out something that works for them has been very difficult because you've got Aspen who loves to hear herself bark and Flocka who likes to do what Aspen does but is also very fearful and Heather who is just kind of in it for the ride. And in the end, with them, what we do is we walk in and we actually have them all touch. So they all come up and touch our hand, and that calms them all down. This is not something I would ever have thought about doing with a client. I mean, but I would now. It's just that the dogs needed to have a way to, their excitement level. Aspen is like at the, She's all the way at the other side of the room because she's got a lot of fear when it comes to strangers at doors, and it takes her a long time to discover that it's not, you're not a stranger. So if I have her touch, then she goes, oh, it's you, and she stops barking. So, you know, this is the thing about learning theory or any kind of learning is, what does the dog have to learn? What emotional state do I want the dog to be in when it, you know, in the end? And what do I have to do to get that learning to take place? And it doesn't matter whether it's something I made up or you made up or something that's in a book. If it works, it works.
The second part of the question.
Of course.
If I do get both of them to sit there, would you suggest trying to move it back so that the excitement is not at that threshold of you walking in?
Well, personally, I would. Because among other things, you're also talking about when visitors come.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have things. So most of my clients, we have the person go in and sit down at a table because I'm usually working with a lot of fear. So, and then the person sits at the table and then the dog starts to calm down. So it depends on whether or not how the dog is going to respond to that. But I think if Susan did that, the dogs would probably start keeping on jumping on you if you sat down.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm suggesting that you go and stand against a counter so that you actually appear to be stronger than you really are. Because now you've got a counter to tell you that you're strong. And that's kind of what I would do with that.
Okay. So what do you do if you have dogs that are fine with people coming in your house, and you do that with your dogs, and you teach them to go in your kitchen, and then you mount and sit, and you give them a treat, but they're still just so overexcited when people come in. So how do you have a person say hi, walk into the kitchen?
If you've got a good buddy who will do that, then absolutely. Otherwise, you're going to be dragging them and going, come on, we got a dog treat over here.
Then would you just manage it so they cannot get to the door?
Yeah, I would say, no, if you're going to be that excited,
yeah.
I mean, what are you going to the door for? To visit, to greet your guest,
yeah.
Right? This is not a training opportunity, per se.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah,
what I would probably do is teach the dogs to either go into a crate or go into a room.
Okay.
And then when they're quiet and the people have been there for a few minutes, then they can come out. And at that point, they should be in their right mind. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually tell them, this is my guest, this is who, and you know. And visitors, believe me, they don't get upset about this. If you don't, they don't really want to have dogs jumping all over them.
Right.
So I always like it that when I go to people's houses and their dog is Coco Crazy Bananas, and they go, I did this just so you could see how he was as I'm standing there and getting, you know, bitten, you know. Well, thank you. I'm made out of iron. That's, you know, not a problem. It really is. I mean, this was the Jack Russell Terrier. It was such a nice dog, though. And then you're bleeding, going, okay, I've got to hide this. So, I don't want to tell anybody. Yeah?
Yeah, I have sort of a timeout question. I don't know if this is timeout or not. Tara would, when she would hear somebody in the yard next door, she'd go over to the fence and bark. And initially, I'd call her, she'd come, and give her a treat, and I thought, oh, and then she, you know, thought, oh, I'd go bark.
Yeah, so she's back chaining. Yes, being a smart dog.
So I'd go out and sit kind of near the fence and just have her sit with me, you know, and the people were making their noise or whatever, and distract her. And it seemed to, you know, that seemed to work. And then she would go to the fence, if I just called her name, just said Tara, then she would stop barking.
Master trainer, you
so
did a
is
good
that
job.
This timeout, I mean, sitting, you know, I mean.
Yeah, you actually. I don't know if that was a timeout. You actually took the opportunity to tell her what you wanted, right? So in the way of training, it's more positive reinforcement because from what you went outside, she barked.
Right.
You went out to the place where she was barking.
Right.
You had her sit.
Right.
So. She was barking, so just pretend she was calling you. You responded by coming out, and then you had her sit. So you actually said, you called me, I came out, I've taken over, don't worry. Yeah, I think that's what you did. And that's wonderful. That it is the same thing that people want to do when they go and the dog barks at the window and they go over and say, okay, thank you very much, that's enough. But what they don't do and what you did is to say, I've got it under control by telling the dog to sit. So if you were going to do that in the house, the dog would go bark at the window. You'd go over to the window, look out the window, say, thank you very much, got that, sit. You just add that last thing saying, I've got it under control. Because you have to actually, you know, demonstrate that you have it under control.
It took a lot of demonstration.
It does take a lot of demonstration. I actually applaud your patience, because most people would lose their temper and start yelling at the dog. And that is one of the things that the, you know, like bark collars they're good for, is the problem with barking is that barking is apparently just self-reinforcing to many, many dogs. They just like the sound of their own bark. And it probably releases a great deal of adrenaline, so it's very fun. So when you try to stop them from barking, you're actually trying to teach them something when they're in the middle of an orgasm. You know, they're just really, really having a great time. And so if you use a bark collar, you are inhibiting that, because the bark collar teaches them that barking is not fun. So a lot of times they can actually concentrate on you. That is the best thing about a bark collar, if you can ever use them, you know. And I'm always in two minds about it. I very rarely actually suggest a bark collar, but if somebody's already using it, I will use it. You know, I'll say, okay, well, as long as you're using the pinch collar, we'll use it. As long as we're using the, if it's not going to make, you know, cause your dog any more distress than he's already had, or we can get it off him or something a little bit later. I did with one woman whose dog, she lives in an assisted living place, and she's got a little terrier who barks at everyone and nonstop, and she was going to get kicked out of her place. So we used a citronella collar. I brought her one, and I told her she could borrow it, and I left it there, and it's still there. And so it saved that dog's life, essentially. And that's fine with me. I think it's good. Another question over here?
No, I was just going to say, if you are working with a client that is already using those, is it your goal to get them to stop using
In most cases, yeah. But, you know, one of the things that, if you go to a lot of classes and you walk in with a pinch collar on, in a lot of classes nowadays, they act as though you are, you know, you're the devil incarnate. Oh my God, I can't believe you use that thing. Well, with a pinch collar, say you have a dog like a Leo, they've got enough hair for about 15 dogs. And sometimes the most benign thing you can do is, because of the way the hair gets caught up in collars, is to use a pinch collar, because that actually does not get caught up in the hair. So there might even be a reasonable usage for it. And if you get a client and they're using a pinch collar and you don't want them to, if the very first day you get in there you say, oh, yeah, I don't use that stuff, and yet they have found it to be useful, then you're telling them that they're wrong. They're bad people and they're wrong. It's like when you were at class and they told you that this, and you immediately go, what do you mean? That, well, I've always used this, this is fine. So if somebody's always used a pinch collar and you're going in there going, oh my God, those are the tools of the devil. You know, what if you just told that person that they've been making horrible mistakes all of their life? So isn't it better to kind of do it really slowly? Oh yeah, these things are pretty useful. There are other things that you can use as well, and well, let's try those in a bit, you know. Much, much better to do it without that kind of thing, I think. Yeah?
I don't use prong collars, and I have told clients when they use them. I just said, I had a lot of dogs on prong collars, and because a lot of these dogs are fearful, and I just said, I just don't do it. It's okay if you want to do it. There are walkers who will do it. And I've never had a person say, I don't want you to walk my dog. They just actually make adjustments, and then that dog ends up being fine.
Yeah,
but I don't say, this is stupid. I just say,
yeah, that's what I mean, though. If you're going in with the attitude that this is the tool of the devil,
yeah,
then you will get defensiveness. So if you're going in with kind of a, that's not what I use, you know, not usually my preference. The other thing about a pinch collar or any for a choke chain or whatever, you need to know how to use it. You need to know why you wouldn't use it. You know, I would not use this on a fearful dog because it causes pain, and the dog is looking at the other dog when it's feeling the pain. Voila, the other dog caused the pain. So that's why I wouldn't use it with that, you know. But if it's just for pulling, and they tried, I mean, people really don't like the gentle leader because the dogs hate them. And they really don't like the sensation harnesses because it first of all, it doesn't work a lot, but it also shifts the center of gravity, and the dogs look really uncomfortable, and they, you know, so they don't like them. Whereas with a pinch collar, it doesn't, you know, so.
If you have a client, you go to a consultation and the dog, they're using a choke chain. So I have a dog that just started walking, it's very anxious, and I just said, I don't use choke chains. And so we use the dad uses a choke chain and the mom uses
a gentle leader.
Both at the same time. And I just said, and so I just hook it to her collar, her flat collar, and she's so close to it. They don't want to use a harness or anything. Mm-hmm. How do you say nicely to try to convince them not to use, this is a choke chain, not a prong collar.
You're at a disadvantage, you're a walker.
I know, and they don't.
If somebody's going to pay a bunch of money for me to sit down and talk to them, then they're probably going to listen to some of the things I'm saying.
Right.
So, but if you're a walker, then you don't have that kind of, credibility.
Right.
So I would probably just say, do you mind if I, you know, I can leave the choke chain on, but do you mind if I just use a regular collar? Or not say anything at all. This is one of those guy things that's so funny. I have lots of clients where the wife uses one piece of equipment and the guy uses the other piece of equipment. And it's as though they think that that's the rule, that you're supposed to use the choke chain or you're supposed to use a pinch collar or whatever. And it's best not to even try to talk them out of it. It's probably best to show them over a period of time that they don't need it, you know, or to help them from an egotistical standpoint is to say, oh, I understand why you're doing that. I think maybe we can start working towards not using it anymore, don't you think? And then we can do that. But it can be kind of tricky, you know.
When you walk them, do you walk them on a harness? So this particular dog, they do not want her walked on a harness because they said that it's too chafing, like it rubs on her skin too much.
Yeah.
So they just said she's really sensitive, whatever, her skin. So I just don't know if they've not used them correctly or what type of harness.
Well, if they're using, if they use a freedom harness, they don't chafe.
Right. So, and I, you know, I did say a little bit about, like, the ones with the,
the velvet.
Fleece, and you know, you have different ones. So I just walk her. I don't use choke chains, and some people are like, never. And they just can't fathom that you walk her. She's so anxious. She's just, and they know she has terrible fear, but a trainer told them to put the choke chain on. So
yeah, well, the people that with the village dog that I saw yesterday, the rescue, the people who bring in the Taiwanese dogs. They said, don't bother with that positive reinforcement stuff. It doesn't work.
Yep.
That's what they said. So that's why they have a pinch collar on this dog that really doesn't need anything like that at all.
He's a nice little dog. And I hook it, and they just said, please hook it to her flat collar because she's gotten out of the gentle leader. So I did, like, adjust the gentle leader a little bit, and I just do a lot of distracting her and getting her back to me. And actually, sometimes she and I just sit.
Okay, so what I was going to do is go through some named, like Bat and Cat and Lat, and these are all named behavior modification techniques, and talk about why they work if they work. And they all work, but why they work, what they're using when they work. So we're going to talk about Bat first. That's the Grisha Stewart one. So in this process of actually working with the dog is walking, it works best with the fearful dog. The dog is walking towards something it's afraid of, and then gives stress signals or displacement behaviors or calming signals, depending on what your vocabulary says that they are. And at that point, the dog is allowed to turn around, allowed to retreat. Okay, so the dog is walking towards something it's afraid of. It starts to, you know, it starts to turn away like this a little bit, or maybe fidget, or maybe the ears will go back. And at that point, the dog can be turned around or turn around and retreat. So they go back about this far, and then you try it again. And so you keep on doing that. And the idea is to reduce the stress. Grisha's, she didn't used to use treats. I think she does now. One of the best things about this is it starts helping people learn what good observational learning is about, because they're starting to observe their own dogs. So when they're moving forward, from the dog's point of view, moving toward, this is a fearful dog, remember, moving towards the other dog, what is that kind of learning? Is it positive reinforcement? Is it negative reinforcement? Is it positive punishment? What is it when they're moving towards the dog?
It's both, isn't
it? Actually, when they're moving towards,
it's
positive punishment, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah?
And moving away is
negative reinforcement. Right? Yes, so that's positive punishment. So, I mean, if you ask her whether it's positive punishment, I don't think she's going to say that it's positive punishment. But if the dog is walking towards something and is so nervous that it starts to offer calming signals of displacement behaviors, then you can be pretty sure that the dog really doesn't want to be walking towards that. And so you are actually adding something which makes things, and so, you know, that is positive punishment. Now, as soon as you say, I will listen to you, and turn away, then that is negative reinforcement, because now you're making a good thing happen because you're moving away. Is it a good form of behavior modification? Yes, absolutely. It's a very good form of behavior modification. So what's going to happen? I remember talking to her about it, and I think it's fine. In a way, it's what I did with Strider, although I didn't think about it that way. What I did with him was I used like a 30-foot line, and he got to decide what he wanted to do. But he was not really fearful. So when you're talking about a conflicted dog, when they're moving towards the other dog, they're probably getting positively reinforced for moving forward and positively punished at the same time. Can you understand why they might be conflicted? Because they want to go up to visit, but at the same time they're afraid to go up to visit. So emotionally, they're all kind of a big mess. So then telling them that they can back off is like giving them release. It's a nice relief that they can actually, oh, shoo, I don't have to make that decision anymore. So anyway, but Krisha said that you could use it on dogs that are not afraid, that are kind of friendly. And I'm like, okay, how would that work? You know, because what kind of cues are they going to use for you? Because they don't want to back up, right? So when they're moving towards the dog, that's positive reinforcement because they want to get there. So they're not going to offer those signals, and then they're going to come back. So she never answered my query about it. So I really don't know. I can say tell you that you, if you wanted to use a form of this that is not really bad, but is that you would stop the dog, and when the dog started to look away, then you'd let the dog go forward. Because the positive reinforcement is moving forward, but we don't want the dog to charge, right? So, and this is, again, what I did with Strider. He'd be walking towards the other dog with the idea of saying hello, and he was moving too rapidly, and the other dog was probably not feeling good, so I would step on his long line, and he'd stop. And then when he turned back and looked at me, I'd say, okay, you can go forward now. So, but to me, that is looking to me for leadership. That is not, you know, a displacement behavior or something like that.
What do you do with a dog who wants to go toward another dog, but once they get there, then they start showing all their appeasement behaviors? Like, what do you do?
Appeasement behaviors? If they're doing appeasement behaviors, that's wonderful.
Well, but not...
Or displacement.
Maybe displacement. That's correct, yeah.
Okay, because so appeasement would be like going, hi, hello, how are you?
Yeah, more displacement.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, that has to do with, that's not learning theory, but that's certainly learning, right? That has to do with time spent in close proximity to something that they are slightly conflicted about. So I'm walking all three of my dogs on leash. Well, Flocka is never on leash, but the other two were off on leash. And this little Jack Russell Terrier type dog comes up, and the woman wanted our dogs to meet, or appeared to, because she went like this. So I let them meet, which I really don't like doing that, because I think that having dogs on leash puts them in an awkward position. But they went ahead and did it. And, you know, I said out loud, I said, this is 3-1, this is kind of hard on your little dog. Because their dog was little, and of course all three of my dogs are like, wow, how are you? Oh my God, you're really interesting here. And so I counted a three, and then we moved on. And that's what you do with dogs that kind of go into conflict. And I really did. And afterwards I thought, geez, do I practice the things I preach? Yes, I do. Because there they are. They're like, sniff, sniff, sniff. Let's go.
So 3 seconds, right?
Yeah. 3 seconds and then go. And if you have two dogs that you're trying to have meet, then you have them meet for 3 seconds, then you bring them back out again, then you have them meet for another 3 seconds, then you take them back out, and another 3 seconds, and by that third time, it just goes along with my old saying, dogs should never meet for the first time. They should meet for the second, third, or fourth time. They should only go on the second half of their walk, and they should never meet for the first time. With those two things, we'd be home free. Everything would be good. So anyway, but that is a very good technique. It's really hard to do in real life, because in order to do it, you have to have a
shelter full of dogs.
Well, you have to have, or a shelter, or you have to have a lot of dogs that you have that are trained, and because this dog is going to go up and back and up and back, and it is also very useful with a dog that's afraid of men, afraid of children, afraid of, you know, hats, for anything like that. It's really good because it allows the dog to make its own decision about when to go forward and when to go back. So it's very useful for that. She offers certification in that. So then there's cat, and by golly, somebody used it the other day. I was just totally amazed. It was a shelter. I think it was at Oakland. The cat is the opposite of bat. Essentially, the dog you're working on doesn't move. It's just in one area. So it would be like me right here, and Chloe would start walking towards me. And if I was afraid of Chloe, then I would start to bark, right? And as soon as I started to bark, Chloe would stop moving forward and just stand there, not looking at me, not doing anything. And then if I stopped barking, Chloe would move away. So in other words, with bat, what happens is the dog learns that their behavior has impacts the behavior of the other dog. It causes the bad thing to go away. Negative punishment, right? Bad thing to go away, or good thing to, anyway. So the dog is definitely operant, though, isn't it? Because the dog is barking. And when he finally stops barking, the thing that is afraid of goes away. Does it work? Yes, if you have all the patience in the world, it works. I did not go to Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz's seminar. I understand that it was very good, except for people came away kind of the same thing I did, which is like, how could you use this? You have to have a dog. Have to have two or three dogs that are good about standing there when another dog is barking crazy at them, and then going away. You can take them away, and then coming back again, and getting closer and closer and closer. Because what he says is, by the time the dog has learned that this, you know, because after a little bit, the dog comes back in again. He barks, and they come closer. He barks. He stops barking. They go away. Comes back in again. He barks. They come closer, he stops barking. And so what he says is that after a while they can actually meet. Just because they're, I think they're worn out.
Yeah.
But essentially what I think is happening is the dog emotionally is going, I don't need to bark. I think that eventually they just learn I don't need to bark. Huh?
Is that related to flooding?
It is a form of flooding. It's a very subtle form of flooding, because usually with flooding, like what Cesar Millan does when he takes an aggressive dog and just shoves it in there with all the rest of the dogs in his pack, that's real flooding. And the cool thing about that is it totally works. I actually think it's fascinating to watch, because you watch the dogs. First of all, the dog does a reactive, it gets put in there, and he counts all the dogs. It's like, okay, there's too many dogs. I can't take them on. And so then he starts to do this stuff, right? Like, okay, well, I'm going to just go over here, but I'm not going to kill anybody. And so the other dogs all come over and investigate him, and he does not look at them at all. And by the time he's done that for maybe 10 minutes, he's part of the pack.
Yeah.
But you can't do that one-on-one because he knows he's got power one-on-one. But when he's flooded, then he has no power and he knows it. The problem is it doesn't translate very well. You take him out of the pack. It's like some dogs are really good in daycare and then are horrible when you go for a walk with them. Because they're just, they're one-on-one. So, but that was what I think of as flooding. But I agree. I think that the cat is a form of flooding. Yeah.
I have one question about this. Does it take into consideration, like, the dog's emotional state?
Well, neither of the, well, yes. No, it doesn't. The cat does? Well,
yeah.
No, I shouldn't say that. Okay, take all that back. Yes, of course it does in a way, because the dog is barking to show its distress. And when it stops barking, presumably, unless it's just exhausted, it's quiet. Now, if you're good, then you would be watching the dog's body language, and if it started to relax, that would be the next time you brought it in. In the times I've seen it used, they have not paid that much attention to the dog's body language. So it would be very distressing for the dog, but if you're good at watching, everything in the end is all about body language and the dog's emotional state and being able to communicate and all that kind of stuff. Those are all things that are very good. Yeah, okay. So that, again, I think this was used, Tricia was teaching a thing at Oakland, and she said they'd used cat, which was amazing, because I'd just never seen anybody use it before in real life. I think what happens with these scientists is that they set up an experiment, and the experiment works, and so then they think they can generalize it, and of course they really can't generalize it, because you can't use cat when a dog suddenly appears around a corner.
Okay.
Oh dear! Stay right there. I'm going to wait till my dog stops barking. And then you can go away. I'm not sure that would work really well at all. And then this is mine, just creative, you know, cognitive anthropomorphism, behavior modification. So, but mine is really based on body language and emotions and, you know, assessing the mood of the dog, trying to help the dog change his mood, turning fear into fun as much as possible, understanding the dog, understanding what motivates a particular dog. This is really important. We're working under the dog's threshold, not pushing the dog, and actually to the extent of only doing it every other day or something like that. So you really allow time for relaxation in between any kind of working that you're going to be doing. And then always having the handler be under control. So, but I do not have a technique. I have about 3,000, you know, 300 techniques or whatever. Okay, so what I would like to do, I think that's it, yeah, I thought of what I was going to do and now I can't remember. Well, since I can't remember, is there any particular exercise or any particular behavior that you would like to discuss? Yes, your hand's already up.
So my dog will sit on his leash before he goes out the front door, and he'll sit when I ask him to outside the front door. But how do I get him to walk nicely out the door instead of dashing?
Okay,
he did it once, but I didn't catch it in time, and I think it was an accident.
So you were trying to capture the behavior, but, you know, it's very hard to do.
Oh, he's never done it since.
Okay. All right, so how far does he go from sit to sit?
3 feet.
3 feet, okay. So what I would probably do, now, to break it down, the sit is really good. Both sits are really good. But the movement part is not really good. The movement part is when he's kind of jerking on the leash or whatever. And what kind of dog is he?
Dobie Lab.
The Dobie Lab mix. Okay. So one of the ways of polite walking is called a wedding march walk. We didn't talk about that, right? The wedding march walk essentially is there is a point to this, okay? You have the dog sitting right beside you. And you can stop it and then turn it around and start it again. So you have the dog sitting beside you, and you say, you know, let's go, or heel, or whatever it is, and you take one step on your left foot. This one actually gets important about what, if you've got the dog on the left side, it's your left foot that goes first. If it's on the right side, it's the right dog, right? Because you want him to be actually following that leg, okay? So you can unplug it, it's fine. So it goes like this, and then sit. Okay? And this, and then sit. And this, and then sit. So I would use that to get him outside. So to the extent that you would even try to be really smooth about opening the door. So get him to do it around the house a little bit. It's a fun game to teach because it's, you know, like heel, sit, heel, sit. And you do not have to give a treat each time. You give a treat after three or four times or whatever. And then if you're using it for walking, you do heel, sit, heel. You know, so you start off at one, go to two, go to three, go to four, go to 15. You know, but for your purposes, I would do it just going through your door.
Yeah.
Just because you've got to sit already. There it is. It's a good behavior. So use that. And
sit is my absolute favorite trick.
What's that?
Sit is my absolute favorite trick.
Yeah.
It's
wonderful. Use it all the time. Use it all the time. And all the other dogs, people go, my dog already knows how to sit. Well, all dogs know how to sit. You watch them, they sit all the time. What they don't do is they don't do it on cue. And what we want the dog to do is do it on cue. And in the case of the wedding march walk, I don't ask for it usually, I just have it happen. But for you, I'd probably ask for it each time. Sit, sit,
okay,
sit.
Verbal.
Yeah. And until he's really gotten it.
Okay.
And he should look at it as a game, and you can look at it as a game, and then you don't want to wring his neck. Because it's like crashing through. Yeah. With Strider, what I would do is I'd say stay, then I'd open the door, okay? And I'd go through the door, and I'd say, okay, he'd go through the door. He had to turn around and lie down right in front of me. He had this real excited thing when he left too. So when you got an 85-pound dog that's doing this, it's a lot of dogs. So he sat here, he came around, he lay down here. And then I would close the door and everything else, and he had to stay in the down.
Yeah.
And I always say that dogs do what they can get away with, and people do what they absolutely have to. So all of these dogs, all they have to do is get up on an ottoman to get their clothing on. And then they, they do have a lot of stuff because they have to sit before they get into the car, and then they cannot come out of my car without my telling them that they can come out of the car. Which is why I have all these pictures of them going in the back of the car trying to come out, you know. So does that help?
Yes.
That's great. Think about it. If it doesn't, we can work on something else. I mean, you know.
No, it sounds... I mean, he's just...
He's a quivering
he's
master.
Struggling and
yes.
Waiting. I can feel his... Even if he's not pulling, I can just feel him inside. Pulling.
Yeah, but think of it this way. You are teaching him impulse control.
Yeah.
And even if... And dobies are like... They're not even sitting. They're little butts quivering above the ground.
Yeah.
It's like this hover.
Right.
You know. But if he's holding it together to that extent, then that's good. And that should be enough. And you can be telling him, I love it, it's really good, you're doing a really good job. I think that you're the most wonderful dog in the entire universe. You know? Yeah.
She reminded me about the overexcitement. My dog tends to hump the air when he gets overly excited.
That's always fun.
The leash or being reactive to another dog. Are there any suggestions to do that? I mean, I tried to just get him into a sit to calm him down, but I don't
And
know
does that work?
For the... time being, and then, you know, it doesn't...
How old is he?
5.
And he's been doing this for a long time?
Yeah, every time I bring out the leash, then he's just...
He starts humping the air.
Yeah.
Because he gets really excited.
He gets super
so
excited.
You bring out the leash, and
just the smell of it, the smell of the treat bag. He used to eat his collars before I got him. His foster mom always said he would always eat his collars. So I don't know if that's something that he just likes, or is it the excitement?
I think it's excitement. Probably it's excitement. Okay, so this is learning theory. So what does a dog have to learn?
To be calm.
And then he doesn't need to do that.
Yeah.
Right? And so now we have to think of ways to do it. So the behavior that you don't want is the humping behavior. If you tell him to sit, that will actually stop the behavior, but it has not stopped it completely.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you might consider doing something like negative punishment. It may or may not work. It really depends on how much he likes the humping. You know, if it's a very reinforcing behavior, it might be very difficult to get rid of. But so this is what I would try. I would say, okay, you get the leash or whatever. What's the first thing that makes him get humpy?
Pretty much getting the leash.
Okay, so you get the leash and he starts to hump the air and you drop the leash and you go and you start to wash the dishes.
Okay.
Okay? You know, he stops humping. You come back, you pick up the leash, he starts humping, you go away again. Now, you can do anything you want to, but you can't look at the dog. Or at least you can't tell him you're looking at him. You can be looking at him out of the corner of your eye. So that this behavior, that air humping behavior, becomes the cue for you to leave. Okay? So if you were going to do it for your behavior, that excitement would be the cue for you to leave. But I didn't think that that would work with this. But I think it probably will with this, okay. As long as he is cognizant. If he has gone into, you know, sexual bliss, it won't. But if it's just what I think it is, which is an associative behavior, he associates that behavior with the leash. And we have to disassociate it. So you just drop that leash, and it's good. Okay, it's not going to be. Instead, eventually, what will happen is you're going to be picking up the leash. He'll start to hump, and you drop it. And he'll go, oh, dang, I forgot. I'm sorry, Mom.
Okay.
And then you can put it on. But I think give that a try, and then let us know how it goes.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else have something they want to talk about what their dog needs to learn? Nothing? Yes.
So I have three dogs. My smallest dog is a 7-pounder. And when we're walking, everything is fine. But the moment that 7-pounder sees someone, you know, passing by, a cat or just another dog, he immediately, like, all his attention goes to that person or that other animal, and he starts barking and barking and barking and barking. And then he gets the other dogs, like, all, you know, amped up. And I try to go in a different direction so he doesn't see them anymore or turn around and go back. But he just continues to, like, turn his head, his body, and he won't stop, and sometimes I just have to pick him up so he doesn't see that person or the animal.
So what kind of dog is he?
He's a little terrier mix.
It's a little terrier mix, and you're walking how many dogs?
Three.
You're walking three dogs. Are they all in the same family?
The two 14-pounders are mom and son, and then the 7-pounder I got 2 years ago.
So, but they're all your dogs?
They're all my dogs. So he gets, you know, all of that just gets his attention all the time, and I'm trying to put him back in the regular polite walking, and I don't know how to
Okay. So just thinking about this logically, you're trying to teach a behavior to a dog who is highly distracted and very easily aroused, right? So if you were talking to me and I was your client and I had this sort of situation and you're trying to cast about for the best way to handle it, what might be the first thing you would tell me? Don't walk the dogs together, right? Separate the dogs so that you can work on this behavior on, you know, you can actually concentrate on it instead of having to worry about the other two dogs. So if there were a possibility of, say, taking him for a 15-minute walk and then coming back and getting the other two dogs, I might consider that. But now the behavior itself, he's good with you and then he sees another thing, and it can be anything?
Just a person, a cat or a dog, and he just...
Yeah, that can be almost anything.
Yeah. Not by car, the bicycle.
And what's it? Oh, I see. What's his name?
Smalls.
Smalls?
S-M-A-L-L-S.
Okay, Smalls. Good name. So what happens if you call his name?
He doesn't pay attention to me.
What happens if you call his name when he's calm?
When he's calm? He's probably like how you said with that terrier mix. He doesn't really care.
Okay, so that would be the first thing I'd work on. And you can work on that with all three dogs. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I usually recommend when you have more than one dog is that you have a name for all three dogs too. So they each have their own name, and then you have a name for all of them. So Aspen's name is Aspen when she's with the other two dogs. It's girls. And with Luke's there too, he just gets left out. No. he doesn't. Then it turns into dogs with four of them. So it's just a collective noun to talk to all of the dogs. So I would work, first of all, I would probably break it down a bit because this is a really difficult behavior problem. And the first part of it I would probably do would be a head snap. And the best way to work on a head snap for a terrier is to say, I've got it, it's in it for you. You know, you're not trying to do it for... So Aspen, wake up. Beauty sleep. Come on. Okay, so you can do it with this way with the smalls, or any way you want to, but that. Aspen! Yes, good girl. So that's a head snap, right? So when you're doing it, you toss the tree to find it, and you're gonna use these again anyway, at least in my opinion. So you do a find it, and you can say, you know, Aspen, find it. Aspen, yes, good girl. So as soon as she looks back, even if she just looks in your key, just looks in your general direction, not directly into your eyes, you still mark it with a yes or a click if you're using a clicker or whatever. So you still mark it, and then you get the dog to come. So because right now, if he's barking and you say his name, he doesn't hear you at all. And even at the best of times, when you call the name of a dog that's kind of overly aroused, I think what they hear is something like, you know, you're 3.5 miles away. You know, so he's already in a state. So then you take him out, and he's not aggressive, right? He just kind of really gets explosive.
Well, there was one time he actually got out of the house, and he saw this 30-pound dog and ran up to it, tried to bite it in its face, but the dog turned around, so I think he would probably try to attack.
Okay. But, by the way, just to make you feel a little bit better, if he wanted to bite, he would get it.
Well, what happened?
He was just showing.
No, he like jumped up, and the dog like moved his head, so that other dog.
But if he would have kept on going.
Oh, I got his leash right away. His leash was on.
Well, usually we're pretty slow when it comes to biting. You know, most people who get bitten just say, "Oh, I just got bit." They don't go, "Oh, I'm going to get bit," because it happens so fast. So it's likely he's probably territorial as well. So that didn't help anything. But this head snap is going to be good for anything that you do anyway. So then you would go to like some place where you can see something from, you're always going to work under threshold, right? So if he starts blowing at 40 feet, then you're going to go to 45 feet. And you do head snaps, you know? So he's over there and you're going, Smalls, yes, good dog. Smalls, yes, good dog, you know? And you can be back and forth and you're doing find-its. Aspen, yes, good girl, you know, so that you've got 100, 200 repetitions of this, in fact, to the extent that you're giving him his food this way. And meanwhile, he probably, if he's walking with the other dogs, I would just do the management, just pick him up, because you can, you know. If he's like a 90-pound dog, you're out of luck, but with a smaller dog, you can. So then you start working on that, and then you start working on the fun. Remember I was talking about fun? So now you've got a dog who does have a head snap, can hear you when you say something, and you're still working outside his threshold. And so now you're going to start playing the find it game, right? So you're walking along, he sees something, and because he's a little dog and he's probably got terrier in him, you want him to actually go find it. So it's find it, then get his name, get him back to you, find it, get him back to you, find it, get him back to you, find it, get him back to you. Again, you're all the way out here 45 feet. When he will do it, then you go to a dog park and be on the outside of the dog park. It's really a great place to work, depending on the dog park. Because I do it all the time in San Rafael. I go to the one at the Civic Center. Because you have a whole area you can work in, you kind of wander on over to the dog park and then wander away. And it's a really good place to work with dogs that need to have, you know, dogs under control. Because one of the things around dog parks is most of them are, with some notable exceptions, but most of the people have the dogs on leash until they get into the dog park. There was one dog that they used to exercise by running him on the outside of the dog park. It's a German Shepherd, and just ran around and barked like crazy. Can you imagine? I would be so mad if I had one of the dogs inside. You're exercising your dog by having him be reactive outside the dog park. Bad idea. So that'll get you started on it. And the reason I'm not having you go towards the other dog is because what we would really like him to do is ignore the other thing, if at all possible, right? So you're giving him games. You're going to start off with the watchman game or the head snap, and then end up with find it. And you get a dog like her. And her brothers, both of whom are double her size, are really, so you could tell she's not all Pomeranian, really reactive to the extent that they were going to put one of them to sleep. And she had that same capacity. But instead of letting her do that kind of stuff, we played games with her. And so now she's just, she's a little creepless sometimes, but essentially she's really good with little dog. So does that stuff make sense? There's probably more you can do because you've got a reactive dog in your hands. But the first thing to always do when you're trying to do behavior mod, when you're trying to figure out a way to teach a dog something, is you put yourself in a position where the dog can learn. And it cannot learn if you are working three dogs at once. You can't teach them if you've got other dogs that you're worried about. Can you do that, do you think?
Yeah, I can do that. I can separate
them. Oh, good. Good. A lot of people don't want to. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure you don't want to.
I don't want to, but it's going to help him
in
the long run than if I have to walk him by himself.
Yeah. There are some things that get better with pack behavior, but this doesn't. It gets worse with pack behavior.
Yeah, because what he was also doing is if he was barking at that dog or that person, and then my other two dogs started barking, then he would redirect at them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so it gets worse and worse and worse. So that's not really good at all. Okay, so that was helpful. All right, the exercise leave it. All right, how many of you guys teach leave it? So somebody tell me how they do it. How Chloe, how do you teach leave it?
With Jack, I taught him first by presenting a cookie in my hand and saying if his nose can close up with my hand, and then say yes and treat with, or click, because he's clicker trained, click and then treat with a cookie that came from somewhere else until I could leave it open. And then eventually I moved it to the ground, and then I cage it with my hand. I mean, it took a long time, but now I can just say it with anything.
Okay, so with Jack, if you're walking along the ground and you see some horse poop, which he may not like, but if just pretend he does,
uh-huh.
And you say leave it, does that work then?
Yes.
Okay. Who else has a different way of teaching? Anybody else? Yeah.
Well, they taught it that way, and they also now teach it. They don't use the leave it.
This is at Monterey?
Yeah, Monterey. Okay. Now they throw the treat on the ground, and the dog is allowed to, can't get at it. So the leash is short enough so the dog can't get at the treat.
So they just prevent the dog from getting
right.
at it.
And then when the dog stops looking at the treat and struggling to get at the treat, then they treat the dog.
So if the dog comes back to them, or?
No, just if it looks back.
If it looks back to
yeah.
them, then they treat the dog.
And they used to do it by walking by the object and trying to distract the dog while it gets by the object and then treat it.
Okay. In your experience, does that seem to work pretty well?
Well, it works in the setup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it didn't seem to necessarily work for something they really wanted on a walk that's on the ground. Maybe just smelling where some dog's message or
right.
Yeah, it was better. Seemed to work better, at least for me, just to keep walking. Come on, get the dog.
Okay.
And then treat it.
All right. So leave it is, in my opinion, in most cases, the way most people use it is positive punishment. And the reason is because it sounds angry. It sounds like no, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're teaching it the way you learned it, Chloe,
mm-hmm.
then you're actually teaching it using positive reinforcement, and then a lot of times what happens is when they start to use it in reality, it turns into positive punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you think you all have seen this, right?
Yeah.
You teach it, you're trying to be really nice about the whole leave it process and all that, and then the dog goes after some cat poop and you go, leave it!
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it turns into positive punishment. It's always been an interesting cue to me. I actually do teach it sometimes, and I definitely teach it when I'm working. That's not true. I was going to say when I'm working with Resource Guardian, but that's not actually true. So I'm kind of with you. What I usually do with regard to icky things is I just call the dog to me. And on the way, they drop it. And then they're going to come for a reward. So if you're going to use it, and by the way, back in a long time ago, the way they taught it was you'd say leave it and then you'd yank the dog. And so it actually hurt him or her. And so they learned to be afraid of whatever it was that was on the ground. It's the same kind of idea with working with rattlesnake training or whatever, is you're actually teaching fear. So the way I teach it, if I do teach it, is actually kind of a combo of those two things. So Aspen, I'm going to do this with you. I know that we don't use this very often, do we? No, we don't. Then I've got this here. So what I'll do usually is go leave it. Good. And I start that from the very beginning, right away. Good girl. And I'm going to actually go past it. Ah, leave it. So what I use is pressure on, pressure off. Mm-hmm. And I try to make it as pleasant as possible. It's an unpleasant cue because you're trying to tell a dog to drop something or to not pick it up. And then, of course, you never let them have it unless you can't see it. Oh, there it is. Good girl. But the nice thing about doing it that way is the problem with it, which when you're doing this, you're actually teaching the words. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And you're teaching them they're not going to get what they wanted. So in a way, that's good, but it has trouble generalizing. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times dogs will do it here. If you put something up here, they're going to get it anyway. You could say leave it till you're blue in the face, because they're place learners. And then if it's something on the ground, what I think leave it means to a lot of dogs is eat it really fast before somebody comes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what do you do with a dog who does that? Who is just like, they've had years of practice of like, grab it and eat it as fast, turn their head away, there's no way, and I'm not going to reach in this dog's mouth to get it.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, that's a great example. The dogs have learned that leave it means you want it. And by golly, if you want it, they're going to get it first.
Yeah.
So there, you have actually, in saying the word leave it, you have actually increased its value rather than decreasing its value.
Right.
Which is also one reason why I think the whole thing about just, you know, come on, let's keep going, because they usually drop things on the way. Let's see. That's a really good example. Let's just talk about that for a second. I know we're almost out of time. But this is the problem that Erica did not, I mean, it's one of your dogs you walk, right? It's not one of your dogs.
It's the big pit.
It's a big pit. And
I love her.
What happens is she gets something, you say leave it, and that means, to her, that means swallow it.
Yeah, that's whatever has been in that bag.
Whatever is there, if you say leave it, she's going to swallow it.
Yep.
So what are we going to do to solve that behavior problem?
You see a lot of difference between it's your choice and leave it.
You know, I did look at it's your choice and I've forgotten what it is.
Where you know, it's very similar where you have the thing in your hand and then when they stop sniffing it, you let them have a little bit of it and then you put your hand over it or you step on it on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they stop trying to get at it, then they go.
Oh, it sounds to me like it's just another word for it, yeah. Another phrase for the same thing. So I don't think based on what you're saying, I don't think there's anything really different. So, anybody come up with a brilliant idea yet?
No.
Da 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 da.
I don't know.
Call them to you, and then you can maybe try to spray things and how to drop them.
Yeah, I think I'd probably take the thing apart.
Yeah. So this is so the cases though is the often things I do not see. Like she will see. Like for instance, we're walking, and I'm always trying to pay attention, but there's just things I don't see. And one time she just grabbed a fast food bag and she just ripped it. And she's so strong. And what happens is she just goes, whoo, like with water.
Well,
it's in a second. I don't even have time to see it. So it's really
well, so you can't work on that behavior.
I can't.
We have to actually change the behavior you're working on.
Exactly.
So what I would probably do is maybe, this is thinking out loud, okay? So you got something that's of low value.
Okay.
Interesting, but of low value. It's like something that is not edible and that maybe a cup or something where the dog will investigate it because it looks like it might have something in it, but it doesn't want to eat it. And then you start, when they get it, you start doing a recall. I mean, I would say just a plain old straight out recall away from the object, and then be really, really reinforcing when they get that.
Like the head snap kind
that,
of thing.
Yeah. And right now, then totally ignore when she gets something, you're not going to be able to, it's a goner, right?
Yep.
So, if you have her on leash, then you can probably run. You have her on leash?
She's always on leash.
So here she is. Yeah. Okay, she grabs the
she
will McDonald's.
Jump 4 feet over.
She grabs the McDonald's bag.
Yeah.
And you see that she's got it. I would say start running. Just start running. Okay, let's go. We're going. Oh boy, find it.
Okay. I can try. I will totally try it. She's so strong.
Yeah, but if you start doing find it,
yeah.
She's going to drop that bag.
She will not drop that bag.
Well,
I'm not trying to put up impediments. I'm just saying she is, when
she
focuses.
Will eventually, especially if she gets something that is not that great. And the
So like bring a hamburger with me and be like, there's your burger?
Okay. Yeah. But it's find it. I mean, it's the game. Find it.
Right. She does know find it. She sure knows fine.
And then the rest of it is kind of recall, or if she's on leash, then it would be just, with me, here you go, good dog. When she and then she'll drop something to get it from your hand. It can't be really high value. If she gets something really high value, she's just going to eat it. She's going to ingest it and that's
chicken
that.
Bones.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
The other thing you can do, this is management, is put an out fox on her.
Yeah.
It stops it entirely.
That's true.
They can't do it.
Is that a choice?
It's the out fox. It's a netting that goes over their head.
Okay,
that
tails.
Is for foxtails, mm-hmm. And it is it's black netting. It makes them look like some kind of spook, but they cannot eat. It's the best thing for coprophagia I've ever found.
Yeah,
because they can't eat it, but they can breathe. They can play. They can even carry a ball.
They can drink water.
They can drink water. They can do. But they can't get foxtails, and they can't eat icky stuff.
They can carry a ball through the net. So
yeah.
It's soft enough.
Yeah. So it's really it's very soft netting, and at first I thought, I wonder why it's black. I mean, because that makes the because there's a golden retriever that walks in our area that has it on because I've recommended it. Actually, it meant the difference between this dog being able to be off leash and on leash, which is nice. But you know, then I discovered that black netting you can see through, mm-hmm. And it is that's why all screens are black. If you get a light screen, you can't see through it nearly as well as a black screen. Isn't that interesting? It's optics. It's called an outfox.
So the issue with that is I'm happy to walk a dog on whatever, you know, like those kind of management things. It's never going to happen with their owners.
Well, why don't you put it on after you started walking?
Oh, no, I could. I don't think they would care, but the problem is, what do you do about it being reinforced when she's on walks with other people? It's just
that's probably the best
there.
Thing about the outfox.
Okay.
You just don't worry about it on yours.
It. Okay.
She's your job when you're walking her.
Yeah.
She's not your job when you're not walking
her. Okay.
So you can say, well, she never eats when I'm walking her. I'm just really, really good, you know? It's like all those trainers who go, yeah, well, it never does that with me.
Yeah. I can't test on this one dog I had now, but she had IBD. She
perfect.
Leave it in home. You know, like if I dropped something, she was really good. We got to that part. Then when we would be out, just like that, she was a yellow lap. Her nose is to the ground. I had to watch her the whole time. She got a chicken book. But I went down her throat and got
Yeah,
back.
Because you can with a yellow lab. Because they go, oh, what else is going in my mouth?
Oh, yeah. You know, but it's like, and that's all I did. And I have a neighbor, and her dog has issues. And he's a sweet guy. He's a good-sized dog. But, you know, he can't eat grass and all this stuff. And so, you know, she's always saying, leave it.
Okay,
so
I'm going to
try that.
Try the outfox because they had no intention of doing this for this season, but it really has worked for a couple of them.
Or
dogs.
Even find or throwing treats.
Or find it would be good too,
So what would you do for a dog, my dog Cass, but my dog Chanel, she was great, always listened to me, but when we would be at the beach off leash, there would occasionally be a dead seal.
Oh, they're so nice.
And she would love to just dive in and just get that smell.
Roll it all over herself.
Oh, yeah. So hard to get out.
There's thought about why dogs do that.
isn't it, from what I know, to mask their predatory smell?
No, I think it's to tell everybody else that they've got something good here.
Okay.
They roll it, they usually put it right here in the shoulder, and that's one of the areas where dogs will smell. I think it's very pack oriented. However, we can't ask dogs, so hey, I can be as right as anybody else. So, you mean, what do you do about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it would only happen.
Yeah, the problem is it doesn't happen very often.
Right.
So if it happened all the time, you could probably work on it. But if you say no to her, presumably that you don't have to very often. No is something you try to say for something like drop the cat, right? Really don't want you to do this. So if you have a big, solid, very powerful no, that, and you have a fairly sensitive dog that has a good relationship with you, that should work. You shouldn't have to use it very often. It's like if your kid's running out in the middle of the street, you yell no, right? That would be when you do it, not when they're getting up in the car and you go, no, which is what people used to do, and some people still do, so you overuse that word, it won't have any impact. But if you don't use it very often, then it should have quite a bit of impact. The other cue that I use all the time for something like this is wait. So a wait in motion is a wonderful, wonderful cue. To stop the dog when they're ahead of you, going a different direction. It's better than a recall, because in a recall, they have to stop, turn around, and come back. Mm-hmm. So there are three elements to that decision, whereas when you say, wait, they just stop. And so, you know, you can teach it using all wonderful kinds of methods. Aspen?
Well, that work on a dog that's just charging up to breed another dog?
It will if you practice it enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With test dogs?
Yeah. Aspen? Go find that. No, it's not far enough. Go find it. Wait. Good. Go find it. Wait. So when you're first teaching it, it's this little movement forward, and then that stops the dog. And the reason I'm going to find it far away is because I don't have somebody else working with it. So, and this is the easy one to do. Go find it. Wait. Okay. Aspen. Fine. Wait. Good. Okay. Come on. Wait. Good. Go find it. That's it. What you're doing. You were doing find it. I'm glad you're it. You're changing the game in midstream. This is not okay. I want to try one more time. I don't.
What if they don't stop and wait? What do you? I guess.
Okay, so you're gonna do it right here. So Aspen, come. Wait. But you can start it off really close. I'm saying come to get her, come to me, but you never say come when you're doing this. Because if you do, then what'll happen is that you say come and they go, what? What? You don't want to wreck your cue. Come should be a come all the way here. So let's see if this works. I don't know if it will. Aspen, come back over here. Wait a sec. Okay, wait. Let's try it again. See, this is the one that did. You have to use a leash on it for this. Come here. Wait. Okay, wait. One more time. Aspen, wait. Okay, wait. Okay, wait. Okay. Go get it. Find it.
You're teasing me.
Find it. Go find it. Wait. No, now she's gone. Go get it. Find it. It's okay. So right there. Find it. You're on top of it. Look closer.
Oh.
You'll get it.
Is that one where you add the verbal cue right away with wait?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of do. But you can see that it's much harder to teach it going away. So what you would do is you'd have a line on the dog, and then you step on the line.
Yeah.
So that they can't go far. But, you know, Aspen actually, we've practiced it off and on, but not for the last 6 months. So with anything, you have to keep on practicing it. Okay. Anything else? All right, so was this a good class? Did it
done?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Should have been 6 weeks.
What's that?
Should have been twice as long.
You're just a glutton for punishment. All right, see you guys next week then. Or, no, I see.